Yes. Okay, Adam Beck, you're online. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Always kind of a sound check, make sure that everyone can hear. Welcome this afternoon to our Board of County Commission meeting. And as we usually start, we start with a prayer, reading, or thought, and then followed by the Pledge of Allegiance. We look to the audience to see if there's anyone who would like to volunteer to participate with us in doing a prayer, reading, or thought, and the Pledge of Allegiance.
I'm your prayer person.
You're the prayer person? Okay, very good. What's your name?
Tammy Harris.
Tammy Harris. Okay. Anybody willing to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Yes. Okay. Yes, Mark. All right. Come on up, Tammy.
So as mentioned, I'm Tammy Harris. I'm the chaplain at the Heritage Community in the Riverwoods Business Park of Provo.
Thank you.
Grateful to be here with you. Our Father in Heaven, we are grateful for the opportunity that we have to be here today. We are thankful for this nation that was founded under thy watchful care, and we're grateful for this state, which was forged out of the desire for religious liberty. And we appreciate this county where we work and serve and reside and raise our families. Father, we seek thy spirit of justice, of peace, of clarity upon this meeting today. Please be with the commissioners, Lee and Powers and Sakovich. Please bless them with the wisdom of Solomon. For truly, these are times which require great discernment. We humbly request at this time to be with us, be with all those who serve with the commissioners in additional roles for the benefit of this lovely community and county. Father, we are grateful to thee for all of our blessings. We're grateful for the beauty of the mountains which surround us as they remind us of thy strength. Father, at this time we also pray for the heavens to not only open with wisdom, but with moisture. We ask thee to bless us with rain to fill our streams and to water our crops and to bless our land. And we say this in the name of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, even Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Chaplain Harris.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Fantastic. Thank you for volunteering to participate with us. We've changed our agenda around a little bit. We usually have work sessions last, and I know that the people that are here with the work session like to sit all the way through our meetings and see how we do business, but they asked if they could go first, and so we changed the work session so that they're first. And then if you voluntarily want to stay, you can and see the whole process. And so if it's all right with the other commissioners, we'll just do the first two items, the work session items, and then we'll look at organizing our agenda. So on our work session items that we have listed, the first one is a work session presentation by the Utah Independent Redistricting Commission regarding the public involvement of the redistricting process. So come on up.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Is that the remote? Thank you. My name is Gordon Haight, and I'm the executive director for the Utah Independent Redistricting Commission. And I brought with me Allie, who's our administrative coordinator. And we also have Bo Bayless, who is one of our interns that's going to help us with some of the GIS that we're doing with the mapping. So just real briefly, who we are is in 2018, the state passed a referendum to create an independent district or independent commission to redistrict after the 2020 census. That commission has been formed. Their responsibility is to take the census when it is provided, and that looks like right now it's going to be about middle of August. August 16th is when we're told the census data will be available. We've been working with ESRI, and it appears it'll be another week, maybe, or even 2 weeks before the data is refined enough to be used. And so the end of September to August, through August is going to be a time of, end of August through September, we're going to be creating maps for the congressional district, the state house, the Senate, and the state school boards. And so what we want to do, it's critical that we have public input, because this is going to set the voting districts for the next decade and how the elections are carried out, and it's going to be a big impact. Utah County, from what I understand, is going to grow by about 1 million people over the next 10 to 20 years, and this is going to be significant for you and how you're represented on the federal and the state level. So we think it's important to get to your residents, make them aware of the effort to redistrict the state, and to get their input. So what we're doing is we have a fairly robust public output program. We're going to be starting July 1st. We'll be at the Freedom Festival. We'll have a booth there. We'll have interns as well as volunteers with computers and iPads. And we're going to start, since we don't have the census data, we're going to start by requesting people to give us what they believe is their community of interest, where they feel it's important to live inside of a community that we don't split up with boundaries, so that they can work together to have their voice at the state and the local level and the federal level as they go through the election process. So we're going to have software available online. Our website will be rolling out the middle of July with software that people can go online to look at this. But we are also going to be going to the farmers market. We'll be going all over the state trying to drum up support to get people to give us the information that they feel is important before we draw up these boundaries. After we've created the map, we're going to again travel out throughout the state with the commission, hold public hearings to view the maps that have been drawn based upon these communities of interest and what's gone on in the state, and getting feedback. On November 1st, we're going to be giving these maps to the state legislature. They're also going to be preparing maps, and they're going to select maps that will create the districts for the elections going forward. And then you guys are going to be in trouble, because that's all comes to your county, and you have to hurry and create your precincts. And so that's going to be a busy time for you as well. So I know counties understand this all too well, and so you understand the kind of things we're looking at. One of the key reasons we feel that the public outreach program so important. We've seen throughout the nation all the riots last summer, and again the attack of the Capitol this year. There's a kind of a feeling that maybe elected officials or the government's not listening to the people, and so we want to create a situation where everybody gets a voice. And so it's really important that we get to everybody, allow them to have a voice, and just let them see that their voice was considered. And that's kind of the key. That's what the commission wants. And so we're coming to you to make you aware of this. And just to note, we've had a couple of your employees in your GIS department that have volunteered to help us make maps on their free time. So that's going to be extremely helpful, and we appreciate that. You have a very robust group that knows how to do their mapping, so that's going to be very helpful to us. And so what we'd like to do is feed you information on where we're having the meetings. We're going to have meetings. We're looking down south here in your county, also in the northern area, to invite people to. And we'd like to feed it to you and have it go out in your comments so that the public can be aware of these things. So that's kind of the ask. Want to make you aware of that. When the final maps are done, the public will be able to go online. We'll have Esri online that people can create a map for the whole state. It's not going to be a lot of people that will want to do that, but we'd like to also have the idea that if people in the county want to do that, they could come to the county building or libraries or rec centers, and maybe you could have your GIS people available several times a week or during several different hours, where if people want to learn how to do the software, it's a little bit complicated, and so it might be intimidating to a lot of people, but if they'd like to do it, we'd like to have them have that opportunity to submit that to the commission. So we'll talk more about that, provide that information to you, but if that's something that you'd be willing to divert some resources to help, we would like to let you do that. And again, it's an all free online software that they can do that with.
So yeah,
any questions?
Yeah, I've got a couple questions. One, Have you coordinated with our elections office here, considering that they'll be?
We have not talked to your election. We've talked just to the GIS folks, and so the we're trying to get with all the counties. Our first right now is this introduction, but a lot of them are aware of the lateness due to COVID of when this is coming.
So I would suggest that as you're going to talk to all of the counties, I mean, obviously coming to the commission meeting is valuable, but also talk to the election offices.
Right.
Because while you're drawing lines for state legislators and state school board, they're drawing lines
for
city councils and city school, I mean, and local school boards, et cetera. And so you're doing a lot of work that's similar. So I think that you should absolutely, as you're coming to these meetings for each county, coordinate with their elections office. On top of that, they may have resources as well. For example, in our county, we have a voter outreach coordinator.
Well, that's great.
And the voter outreach coordinator is in charge of voter education, and tacking something for this on to that would not be really difficult. So that's a resource that you should be coordinating with them, because they're reaching out to the voters anyway.
Yeah.
On that note, I know that our elections office is actually doing a lot of work to reach out to the community in that, for example, at the Freedom Festival, they're going to have a booth where they're registering people to vote. They could also be encouraging people to give feedback to the Redistricting Commission.
Yeah.
So I think coordinating with those local election offices is going to be, not only does it make sense and create efficiencies, but it also, you're doing a lot of the same work and they've got resources.
No, that's great. I love that.
Yes, a couple questions. I mean, a lot of this is pretty data driven. I was just wondering, on an individual basis, drawing up maps, are you putting parameters in place? Because, I mean, it's a numbers game. A lot of it is just where the numbers are, and so if an individual is drawing up a map, do they have to fit within a certain box as they're drawing up that map to make it work, or is it?
So,
what does that look like?
So when they're looking at their community of interest, that can be anything. There's no parameters. So if a group is saying, you know, this is my neighborhood, we have the same baseball program, we kind of want to make sure we're grouping as a block, circle it, and that will be part of the consideration. But when you start creating the districts, that's where the numbers come in. You have to have target numbers, and the deviation cannot separate. But the goal will be is to include those communities of interest in a single precinct or in a single voting, whether it's a congressional district or a state, a senator or state representative or school district. The final map will be very driven by data, but we can start with knowing where people of interest are so we can keep groups together. We've seen some cities that have never had a state senator, and yet they're one of the largest cities in the state, because you have to campaign out of your city to get enough votes because of the way it's split up among its neighboring communities. We've seen some cities split equally in half, so it's hard to get anybody elected from your city because you got to campaign out of your area to do much. And so we want to know where people feel that their community is, where they can have a voice and be able to speak to government. So that's critical for us.
Okay.
I don't know if that made sense.
Yeah, interesting. Can you tell us a little bit about, because you have the independent commission that's doing this, but also the state legislature is doing theirs as well. Tell us a little bit about the coordination, cooperation with that. Ultimately, I know the state legislature will make the final decisions on it, but how does that work in your mind?
So I think that's really important. That's a crucial question. So we're following the same track. We're going to get the same information, the same data. And I think what we're looking at is we're going to be going forward with this very significant public outreach, taking all this information to start our maps. What we want to bring to the legislature, they'll have the legislative redistricting maps, and we want to bring them the people's districting maps, and they'll have to make a choice between the two. And so we want to make this robust. We want it to be what represents the people, so that they feel like they have the most say in this important process.
Okay. Thank you.
So what you're anticipating working middle of August through the end of September? And there'll be workups, of course, to middle of August, but you feel pretty comfortable that you'll have this wrapped up. with all the other coordinations by the end of September?
We will. It's legislatively stated we will. So
you have no choice.
Yeah. So November 1st is when we have to submit so there will actually be three maps for each of those that we'll prepare. One for the, three maps for the federal representative, House, three for the state representative, and three for the Senate, and three for the state school board. Those will all be submitted with a report to the state legislature. Those will have public hearings throughout the state before we're submitting them to them, but we'll be ready.
Okay.
And busy, yes.
You have remarkable work ahead of you.
No, we're excited, and everybody's going to be totally happy with our outcome. So
absolutely, absolutely.
We have a very innate goal. I didn't show you all the slides, but we're excited to be part of your community.
As you go through, obviously, numbers aren't going to be perfect, and they're not going to match perfectly. As you're looking at that, are you guys looking at high-growth areas?
That's a very interesting question, because by statute, there's a time when we have to use the numbers, and that was when the census was taken.
Right.
And we know that Utah County is already, you guys are growing past that even today. And so by the time we redistrict in 10 years, it's a potential that one person, one vote will not exist in Utah County, because you'll have grown so extraordinary. Mm-hmm. But it's important for you to recognize that, be aware of it, and let's talk about how we do our districting so that over time you don't lag that a little bit, because this is going to be, and we see that with the southern part of Salt Lake County and other places that we see these high growth things taking place.
Right, and that's what I mean. The numbers aren't going to be, for example, you're not going to be able to put 10,000 people in each area. There's going to be like some areas that it's like 9,723,
yeah.
And another area that it's like 7,521.
Right.
And so as you're looking to grow those areas, if you're looking at an area that has maybe a little bit of a smaller area, are you looking to make sure that those are in high growth areas? Because if you have variation of 1,000 or two, and you're putting the high end of that variation in a high growth area, and the low end of that variation in a more established area, then in 10 years, we're going to be almost 2-1.
Yeah, so you won't see that heavy of the Supreme Court's come down very hard on making sure that we have a very small deviation. So there could be some areas in your high growth that might be a little bit lower than existing areas, but it's not going to be significant because we have to be so close when the final districts are done. So, but it is consideration. I won't be drawing the maps. It will actually be the commissioners drawing the maps, but I'm sure they'll be thinking about that, and we hope the public comment comes back and reflects those comments.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Again, we'll be back in touch and bother you again, so thank you.
Yeah, and coordinate with the elections office.
Yes, we will.
Thank you for that presentation. We'll move to our second presentation of Regional Emergency Response Plan developed by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which includes voluntary organizations active disaster in Utah Valley, interfaith in support of local governments. And are you doing this one, Stephanie? Both of you. Just come up and announce who you are, and that way we can get your name correct on the record.
Yes, I will introduce those of us that are presenting, and then we will take turns sharing a little bit of information. My name is Kevin Losey. I am a Welfare and Self-Reliance Services Manager for the church, and we're joined by several other managers here. In fact, Utah County has 5 Welfare and Self-Reliance Managers. Starting up in the north end, we have Adam Moody. So if you can raise your hand, I'll have them raise their hand as I announce them. Adam works up in the Alpine, Highland, Cedar Hills area. As we continue south, we then have James Howard, who works in the Saratoga Springs, Eagle Mountain, coming all the way across through to Linden. Then have Stephanie Ashcraft, who is in the Orem and North Provo area, basically from BOU campus going north. Following that is Randy Call, who works basically from BOU campus going south. He continues down through Springville, Spanish Fork, Mapleton area. And then I have the south end of the county, Salem, Payson, Santaquin, Goshen, that area. We're also joined today with Carrie Malkovich, who represents Latter-day Saint Charities as part of the VOAD that we'll be hearing a little bit about today. And we have a couple of individuals who are part of the Church Communication Council with us. Stephanie Ashcraft, who's actually here on dual roles, both as a Welfare and Self-Reliance Manager and as a member of this Communication Council. But Mark Seastrand is also with us, who is part of that Communication Council. So these are the different parties, as you see on the slide there, the different groups that are involved in this regional emergency response plan, each with different roles and responsibilities. And so I'm just going to briefly describe what our role as welfare and subclients managers is, and then we'll have others talk about some of these different parties and what their role is. But as a welfare and subclients services manager, our role primarily is to gather information. If a disaster happens, if we have some major emergency, try to gather as much information as we can to understand what are the needs of that situation. If evacuations are needed, for example, is a church building needed as an evacuation center? Or if property is damaged, are the things needed from the church, generators, chainsaws, tarps, that type of thing? And so as managers, we help facilitate that, going through the approval process of access to the buildings, starting the process of getting different resources from the church to help in those situations. Now, the thing that's great is in those situations, the church isn't acting alone, that we do have these wonderful partners through the VOAD and other faith-based organizations that are active and part of that. And so Carrie's going to tell us a little bit more about the VOAD and what their role is in these situations.
Thank you. It's nice to meet among friends. It's good to see you all. Of course, I'm in a different role. I've been asked to serve ecclesiastically representing LDS Charities for Emergency Management. So it's a little bit different than my folks here that I'm here with today, but representing VOAD. I wanted to first express my appreciation for Utah County being a VOAD member. Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster. It's a statewide organization that has nearly 300 partners. In Utah County, we have our interfaith organizations, ecclesiastical organizations, as well as all of our nonprofits. So we have Food and Care Coalition, Tabitha's Way, Salvation Army, almost any nonprofit you can think of is involved, as well as all of the interfaith community. And so we're here representing, I'm representing LDS Charities. I serve on the state VOAD board. I also then represent in what's called Region 3. Utah County is in Region 3 of VOAD. That also includes, besides Utah County, Daggett, Duchesne, Uinta, Juab, San Pete, Carbon, Millard, Sevier, Emory, Grand, Paiute, Wayne, and San Juan. So you're in good company. We do work quite heavily with Peter Quitner, and we can't say enough goodness about him. As you all know, he is a marvelous emergency manager and a great partner for VOAD. He's able to assist us all over the state. With that, what we do as VOAD is we coordinate response. As I have worked with all of you in emergencies, and we know that local officials are in charge of an emergency situation, but local entities can't do everything, and they need those nonprofits and those churches to come to the aid. And yet we don't want redundancy, or we don't want people to get in the way. And so that's what VOAD's role is to coordinate, build relationships so that you know, so that Peter knows, so that any of the municipalities know that they have a friend. As was said earlier by Kevin, if there's generators needed, if there's trucks needed, if there's food needed. You know, a Red Cross is one of our big partners. Sometimes it's just little things, but sometimes there's big things. So we might look for mass care sheltering. We might consider mass care feeding or distribution of emergency supplies, the reunification, of course, coordination with our government partners, and then recovery. So all of those things are taken into consideration. And today we're here representing the church as one of those VOAD partners in what we can do to assist the county in any emergency situation. And of course, feel free to ask us questions as we're giving our presentation.
Oh, thank you. I was just going to ask that. Yes. Do you want us to just do the presentation and listen, or if you want us to ask?
Well, what do you want to do, Bill?
Well, it's easier when the thought comes to my mind
okay.
to be able to ask.
Ask
that
away.
Question. So to ask, I want to ask a question on post and pre. Mm-hmm. Is this emergency management mainly on after we have had a substantial, and I don't know what the definition of emergency is, because, you know, I mean, we can have
it's
we
from
can
here
have
to here.
Right. I mean, one family, you know, can have a flat tire, and that's a major emergency, right?
Yeah.
And in some cases, you know, I just want to know, as we're talking through this on a county, because as you're talking, my mind is bouncing 1,000 miles an hour saying,
yeah,
what about this? What about that? And I don't even know if that even qualifies or if we should even call. And then the post and pre is it just after the emergency has, or just after the incident has happened, and now we're kind of doing shelters and cleanup? Or is there an opportunity for, we're looking ahead and we're saying, we have got something coming down the road. Like, for instance,
yeah,
we're in the major severe drought right now, and mm-hmm, we're looking at the mountains and we're scared to death. Every time I turn around, we're scared to death about what might happen up there.
Uh-huh.
And when I've worked with NRCS and others, and I'm probably, this is more of a dialogue on my part than it is a question.
But I know exactly where you're coming from.
Yep. And so NRCS, they say we can only do so much, and they usually do after.
It's after for them.
And I've
and
asked
same
them,
with FEMA.
And same with FEMA. Mm-hmm. They're after. And with the mayors and others, I've been saying over and over, we need to do more in the way of fire cuts and in our breaks and how we can get up there and protect watershed and what we can do before the drought becomes to the point where it's a fire and the floods come and you know, and the
right,
rain finally washes it out. So I just don't know exactly what your responses would be when,
yeah,
it comes to kind of those.
And so, was, yeah, that
as you're talking, uh-huh, about this, I was thinking of Woodland Hills, for example,
mm-hmm,
a couple of years,
exactly,
ago, and up in Lehigh, and then Eagle Mountain. Is that's the type of thing that you're responding to or preparing to respond to,
right?
And
I think
use
that's
them as a point of reference,
Tom. I think that's one of the reasons I have this role, is because of my role during the Woodland Hills fire,
yeah,
you
up,
know, and
it's up your street.
Unfortunately, it is.
Yeah.
But yes, VOAD has a role pre and post disaster. We meet every month for both the state and our region with our partners. We meet monthly. We talk about what are the needs of the community at the time. And if a community comes forward with a need, we figure out what resources are needed. Mm. Now, we don't step on anyone's toes and tell them what they have to do. But at the same time, we offer those resources. The web EOC, which Peter uses for the county, we also use. We're able to see who has what supplies that could be used. We know that Saratoga Springs has some stuff up Spanish Fork Canyon right now to help with some of the fires up there. When there's something needed, we work together to coordinate what services can be provided. And so there are cities that come forward and say, hey, we need some help. Stephanie's going to tell a little bit about something that we've been working on for a while now. But we're able to step in as a group and say, what is needed and where can we help? And so it's both. But, you know, we've kind of, I would say that the majority would focus on post because they don't know that they need help until they need it. And so we're trying to give these presentations to a lot of the different municipalities and counties to let them know that we're here and that we're available, and that if they do need that pre-help, that we can assist them in that. So, and I'll let Stephanie tell you a little bit about something we're doing in Mapleton.
So you're aware of the Ether Hollow fire, and there's the chance, we have an 80 to 100% chance one portion of that might give. So we've been meeting pretty regularly with Nick Glasgow, the fire chief there, and have already gotten a list from all the organizations that could actively help after, if something happens to happen. And we've sent that list of here's who could do potentially what if something happens in Mapleton. And we already actually have an evacuation plan in place using the Red Cross and a church building, so that as soon as they get that alert, they just, everybody who could be in that affected area just knows, go to this place. And so we have communication threads in place. So yeah, we are working pre in that case. Now, I had another thought when you said, like, help clearing out things, that kind of thing. Now I'm putting on my other hat, which is the communications hat. We have the statewide. I think it may be a national day of service on September 11th coming up. And we have stakes around the whole entire state that are planning service projects. So if you have any project ideas that could be used on that day of service, please, Mark Seastrand's contact is on there. He's the director of our communications council. And we can share those ideas with the stake leaders that are looking for service projects for that day. So that was just another thought. So the communications role, our big role is that we build relationships, activate the relationships. In an emergency, we coordinate closely with the welfare and self-reliance managers, the government PIOs, Peter Quintner, Allison Jester from the county, any city emergency managers, we coordinate with them, along with Carrie Malkovich, of course, who's the VOAD representative for the church, and Austin Clark and other partners who are involved. And the idea is we don't want to invent wheels that are already invented. So it's just a matter of, hey, these are the organizations that could help with childcare. These are the organizations that have the portable kitchen or portable showers if needed. Who has what in an emergency? So we've developed a matrix that people can, the emergency managers can access, and they can see, okay, well, this organization could potentially help with this. And again, the most important thing on slide two is, in the event of emergency, all the participants listed here, we take our primary direction from civil authorities. So that is county, that is the sheriff, that is the emergency managers. We're just here to support as needed. And do you have any questions for me?
I do have a question.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about fires, earthquakes, those things are obvious, and I see a lot of participation and interest in it because it's usually very visible. Mm-hmm. What about the other emergencies that we have in our communities, like the opioid epidemic that's going on and homelessness that we're trying to wrap around our hands around and try to figure it out? I love the community involvement, and I truly do believe that the shining stars in our community should always be our nonprofits, our churches, mm-hmm. our business leaders. They're the real stars of our communities. But I think that we have slid back a little bit, always thinking that government's going to support it. Mm-hmm. And so when the neighbor down the street has a problem, we call the police to solve the problem. But then afterwards, where's, you know, that community support to rally behind and pick mm-hmm. up, you know, the damaged pieces and move it forward, because government can't solve the problem. Mm-hmm. And so is there an opportunity when we're looking at the opioid crisis, homelessness issues, you know, and many others that are out there, is that part of this program as well?
So that actually is on the concern list for every welfare and self-reliance manager on that list. I would guess, I don't want to speak for all of them, and I'm the brand newest member of that group, but that is the concern. That would be something that I, as you were talking, I had the thought, if you're having discussions on that, I would include Karen McCandless, who's the chair of the Utah Valley Interfaith Association, maybe in some of those, if you wanted to bring her in. We could send a representative to participate in those discussions as well. But that's a concern that all of us have. It affects all of us. We have other faith leaders around the county. Tammy was actually the chair of the UVIA. That's why I looked at her. She was the previous chair. So you've got lots of concerned people that is something that they're worried about for the people that they associate with and the people that are in their congregations or that they're servicing with their nonprofits.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind doing a follow-on work session in the coming few weeks to maybe address those types of things.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And more likely, we will like have some fires, and we can also include that in the discussion in the coming weeks, too.
Yeah, we're pretty sure we're going to have some of those problems.
Well, and I think that poses the issue is that we have emergency natural disasters. We have emergencies that are the homeless, the opiate epidemic. We have those types of things. And you're right, government cannot solve all those issues, but where do we come together to solve those? Now, VOAD mostly focuses on emergency management with natural disasters, fire, earthquake, flooding, those types of things that the Red Cross and FEMA may be involved with. That's what mostly the focus is, but we have been hearing more presentations about other things, especially mental health issues have come into play as part of emergency management as well. And so I think that as we spread our wings and as we're talking to our counties and finding out what are those needs, what are the emergencies, I think it gives us the opportunity to incorporate more of that discussion. But the interfaith would be an excellent way to start on some of those. Okay, I know I have to push the button to go forward. Let's see, did I push the right one or? I'll let you help me. I need an assistant in the next one. Nope, still a next one. We've been talking for a while and didn't go forward. Let's see, maybe it was one from before. There we go. This is our little flow chart from the church, just so you know where you fit in what we've been talking about today. State and local government emergency management, which is all of you as well as Peter Quitner. And then I am the VOAD representative, so I work with all of the elected officials. Then we go forward with whatever you need. If you need any kind of welfare services, humanitarian aid, if you need some help with the communications, if that all goes then from us directly to the Area 70, and then they are able to go to the greater church community and find out what is needed. And so it's an important step that we understand the flowchart and that you all have me in your phone already. And so if you need something, make sure that you just call or text and say, hey, Carrie, we're seeing this is going to be an issue. And Peter and I have talked quite frequently as well. So we just wanted you to be aware of where we're at. And we have others who will talk about how the rest of the church in that sphere help you. As we know from Bill, from the 2018 fire, sometimes a city can say, we need to evacuate. And people look around and, I don't think so. But when the church sends through their communication council, or communication lines, and the state president says, you really should leave town. They all say, okay. And then they wave at us as they leave. And so it's a good partnership to have a government authority and a trusting ecclesiastical leader. And so that's one thing that we bring to the table.
James Howard, Welfare and Self-Reliance Services Manager from Linden out to Eagle Mountain. And I've been asked to talk about, back on slide one, let me see if I can get us back there, that in the third panel there under church leaders, we partner with church leaders. That's primarily who we as Welfare and Self-Reliance Managers work with. There may be some terms on there that may be unfamiliar. Stake president, do you know what a stake is? Or an Area 70, would it be helpful for me to explain a little bit about that? Or are we okay to go forward?
I think we get it.
Okay. So church leaders that are involved with emergencies that have been tasked with responsibilities kind of at the county level are Area 70s. And those that report to Area 70s are the stake presidents. And then you have within those who support the stake presidents within the stake who they ask to be in charge of emergency management within their stake is typically a stake relief society president. So those are the players within the church organization that help with the emergency management. And that's just what I wanted to share. Any questions on that?
Okay. Got that. Thank you.
I am Randall Call, a Welfare and Self-Reliance Manager from BYU campus down through Spanish Fork and out to Birdseye. And as we talk about the role of the leaders and the stake presidents and what they do with emergencies and preparing for emergencies on slide five, we're glad we got good help there. It talks about some of the roles of what they do if a disaster is approaching. And a great example is the Ether Hollow Fire, which has already been mentioned, where it's an 80 to 100% chance that some of that mountain could slide in a thunderstorm this summer. And with the affected stake, that's there. And working with the city, we know that 12 homes are, could potentially be damaged with that slide. And so with that, with the city and their emergency manager, which is who the church leaders will always take direction from, is those, the government officials on that. We've, you know, the situation's been assessed. There's already been two sandbagging events to help homeowners. There's been civil engineers brought in to for the homeowners. The church arranged this to help them and to plan on where to put sandbags and build berms to protect their property. There's another sandbagging event scheduled for July 17th on a Saturday morning. That will probably be the final sandbagging event. So they've assessed the situation, activating the emergency notification system, working with the city. There's already a GroupMe text group set up. They've already had a practice evacuation. There's been an evacuation center, a location set up. The city requested that the church set one up, so that's already been set up. We've already done an evacuation drill, warning the members with that, working with the city. The church did flyers to every home in Mapleton, encouraging them to sign up on the Everbridge system so they could be notified and supported with that. And then, they've got everything done, and then communicating their status and planned actions to the Area 70s. That happens on a regular basis, I know. And then in my role in supporting the stake, I've been able to also communicate with the Area 70 and keep things up so they know the preparations and the things that are happening with that. And when the disaster happens, or a fire or an earthquake or something, on the next page, on the next slide, shows what they will actually do. And again, always we have right at the top in the red that the primary direction should be taken from the civil authorities. They're the people in charge, and the church is there to support. And so if something were to happen, the church to activate their notification system, whether that's block captains, which would include, you know, everybody, you know, all the homes in the area, to reach out to the emergency management team. They know how, you know, in Ether Hollow situation, stake president knows how to get hold of Carrie, knows how to get hold of me as well with that. We have mentioned the Emergency Operations Center set up and already know where that's going to be. And then as they identify the needs, that gray box on the left are six questions which the stake presidents to assess and look at to make sure that the members and full-time missionaries are accounted for. What's the damage to members' property or church property? And then the extent of the damage in the community, including damage to homes of people who are not members of the church. And if there's any response or any support needed from church headquarters on anything. And then I will communicate that information up my line. Carrie will communicate it up her line, and also the stake president with the Area 70. So we really have three channels of communication in case one of those breaks down to do that. And it's just always a process of, you know, duplicating the communication so that happens, but following up to make sure everybody's taken care of. And it happens when the fire happened and there were evacuations that took place, all that information was known really, really fast. I was out of town and Kevin covered for me, and Stephanie helped out. But as I was on phone and texting with him while he's out of state, I know that communication happened real quick and everybody was taken care of. So it happened real quick and we're really pleased. And I mentioned that the city of Mapleton have been absolutely fabulous to work with and supportive and helping in preparing for this potential mud flows and with the Ether Hollow fire. Are there any questions?
Just the redundancy in the communication. It sounds like it's the church and the community, but it's also the church and interfaith at the same time working with the, because
yes.
I just want to bring that out on the graph. I didn't quite pick that up, but it's a constant flow. You meet monthly with the interfaith community, and then they work with together as one voice working with local governments then.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that the end?
That's it.
Feels like we need to clap or something, but anyway, thank you for coming and presenting.
Thank you.
A lot of good information there. Keep prepared. Keep working it. Looks like the group doesn't want to stay for the rest of the meeting, so we'll give them a second.
We only have like 38 items on our agenda.
Yeah.
38. Yeah.
We had 38 on
our. Oh, sorry. It's 37.
All right. We will. Our next item is a public hearing. And so let's do the public hearing. We'll need a motion to open that.
I'll move to open the public hearing.
I'll second the motion.
I got a motion and a second to open the public hearing to conduct. This is to conduct a public hearing concerning the amending of the 2021 budget in the county's general fund. Are there any public comments? Come on up, Dale, and go ahead.
Josh, this is...
Well, you have to introduce yourself so we can put it in the minutes.
I'm looking to see my unwilling victim's not here. So, Steve White, work in the commission office on occasion. We have a question regarding the 680 fund. There was a memo from Jeremy this week that had addenda attached, and it said in the fifth paragraph of the memo that the 680 fund had been apportioned and amounts for various departments to pay into it had been determined, but they weren't demonstrated in the attachment that came with that memo. And so the question that we have is, can the auditor's office provide to each department how much is going to come out of their 9200 fund, and then demonstrate that on the budget documents so that we see where that impact is and how much it is?
Yeah, this is the first year that 680 is being used to essentially track the cost of internal services that are administrative in nature. So right now, the current 2021 adopted budget has those internal service charges classified as 9,200 non-departmental in each fund type. But to your point about if they've been allocated out to each department account line, no, not yet. A lot of that is because, you know, with this being the first year, we're actually determining exactly the best breakdown for a department by department basis. But those are planned to be entered into the budget system soon for the 2021.
Okay, because Jeremy's memo indicated that those amounts had been determined, but I guess maybe not precisely determined yet.
Yeah,
roughly determined.
There is an attachment on the agenda.
Yeah, but it doesn't have anything listed in 9200 or anything listed in 680 fund coming from 9200. That's what I'm asking, is so that we can determine what kind of burden it is, because that will adjust budgets in the future. And it will cost money of different departments. And this isn't a getcha or anything. This is just a request.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that's accounted for in the budget.
The total expenses from each fund are reserved for those charges.
I know that.
So it won't impact any department's budget. It'll
correct.
Be a net neutral impact.
But when we set next year's budget, we'll need to see what what that is.
Right.
And so have the first 5 months of this year been determined yet for demonstration purposes or anything?
We could certainly look into doing that.
Okay. I'm carrying a request from the chair. That's all. And so if we can work on that would be helpful for us, because on the budget and the addenda that were attached, you see the IT fund, you see the radio fund, the telephone fund, the building fund, the motor pool fund, you see all of those, but 680, there is no corresponding amount going into each budget, even though it's there in the 9200 line. It's not demonstrated, and if it could be moved every month, that would be helpful. Okay, thank you.
Come on up, Dale.
My name is Dale Summerhays, and I just want to take a minute to tell you that I'm here in support of the action you're taking to amend the county's budgets for 2021. I appreciate the consideration that you're giving to the property taxpayers in the Utah County who got hit very hard in 2020 with major tax increases. Thanks again for your efforts in this regard, especially Commissioner Sakovich for all his work preparing all the details of the proposal. And my hope is that this resolution will be approved this afternoon. Thanks again for all you've done in this regard.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Since we're in a public hearing. Seeing none, any online? Alice, none, okay. Then we'll need a motion to close that.
I'll make the motion. We close that public hearing.
I'll second the motion.
I got a motion and a second to close the public hearing. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are now closed. As you'll see on our agenda, now we'll finally get to building and the rest of our agenda. Our consent agenda has nothing listed underneath it. We will attempt to fill that by not holding our regular agenda items. If we hold the regular agenda item, then that will stay on our regular agenda. Everything else will go to the consent agenda, which means that it has been approved, ratified, agreed to by all three commissioners. And so with that, let's start with one through 10.
I'd like to hold number 5 and 10.
5 and 10, okay. Any others? How about items then 11 through 20? We could hold number 16. 16 needs to take action. Any others from 11 through 20?
No, I don't.
Seeing them there. 20, how about 21 through 28? If we could hold number 28. And then 29 through 33.
Yeah, 29, 30, 31, and 32.
And 32. So
it was requested that that 32 be stricken. That came from David Levitt to strike that.
Strike 32.
Okay, strike that one.
Yeah. So then 29, 30, and 31.
Okay. And then on the closed meetings, I have, actually only have 34 circled. Is there, do we need any others, Dave?
34 and 37.
34 and 37?
Yes.
So if it's okay, we'll leave it on to strike on the consent agenda items number 35 and 36. And then on consent agenda to approve and set a date, time, and location for closed meetings as discussed in 34 and 37. That's agreed to? Okay.
That works for me.
Okay. Alice, do you want to just recap for clarification purposes?
You bet. Okay. I have we're holding regular agenda number 5, number 16.
What? And 10.
Sorry, pardon?
Number 10.
Thank you. Okay, so number 10, and that, what did I say? Sorry, 16.
Mm-hmm.
And then number 28, 29, 30, 31. We're striking 32, and we will hold the closed meeting number 34 as stated, striking 35 and 36, and holding the closed meeting of 37 as stated.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fantastic. So the ones we're holding, we'll leave on a regular agenda for discussion. The rest have been moved to consent, and they have been agreed to, ratified, or whatever the language is that they have on there to be approved to. on the consent agenda. Okay, with that then, we will move to agenda item number five. Agenda item number five is to approve and adopt a resolution amending the 2021 Utah County budget. We do have budget documents on this. We've all seen the budget documents.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. One question I have that I didn't see. I know on a work session, Commissioner, you had a bunch of items, but they weren't on the budget document, so I'm assuming that.
Yeah, we're fine.
We're okay.
Yeah.
Commissioner.
Yeah, I think I'll carry those forward to the 2022 budget in the fall.
Okay.
Okay. I was asking that we hold this for a brief moment because of the $6.6 million that we've reduced, which is about 34% of the $19.3 million. There are other options, but I can't get to them at this point because we've had some guidance from the state auditor. We've had some guidance from our clerk auditor's office. We've had some guidance from our civil division on how to best approach this. But the additional funds are not yet accessible because they're not fully understood by all departments. I'm referring to recorder's fees that are interdepartmental assignments have already been made, but are they adequate enough? And there isn't time enough for me to address that before the end of June when we have to set the rate given the state statute. And so for me, I would like to postpone this or continue this until we set the rate on June 30th.
Okay. The only thing I had on there was that $7.5 million, which was just an accounting.
Yes.
It was put in there for accounting purposes so that we could have it, in our capital projects as that transfer. And the rest of it that I see in this document is the is going with the 680 account, just making sure that we have it listed mm-hmm. out all the way down through. If I have no problem in holding this over till next
just,
week,
just
I
mean, so next I can get the full like clarity the on week. Get the full clarity on those amounts because I did not pursue it the one we addressed it the last time, but I had recommended we move $8 million from the general fund into capital improvement, and this is $450,000 less. So I just wanted some additional clarity on that.
Okay. All right. I guess then a motion to continue it would be in order.
I'll make a motion that we continue 1 week to June 30th.
All right. I'll second that motion.
You got a motion and a second to continue item number five to June 30th. All in favor say aye.
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 That passes 3-0. Okay. Item number 10. This one's to approve and authorize the signing of a resolution declaring a local emergency due to extreme fire danger and imposing temporary restrictions on open fires and fireworks in all county parks. Come on up, Ben.
I had some additional thoughts about that. I wanted to hear the approach first and then go from there.
Sure. Good afternoon, Commissioners. It's a pleasure to be with you today. This agenda item that you're looking at came as a request to me from Public Works, predicated, I believe, on a conversation with Commissioner Sakovich, suggesting that given the extreme fire dangers and the drought conditions that we face in the county, it might be appropriate to prepare a resolution that would allow us to put a restriction or a ban on open flames and fireworks and things like that in our county parks. And so when that request came, it originally came with a request that we apply something retroactively. We had constitutional concerns about a retroactive application of a ban, and so we suggested in the alternative that maybe if it was urgent to have a ban in place before the weekend, when the request came late last week, that maybe we could pursue a signing and ratification. We have internal policies in the county attorney's office where we prefer to have broad consensus, unanimity, ideally, when it comes to a sign and ratification process. And there was not that level of consensus amongst you three commissioners. And so now we have it on the agenda as a discussion item or action could be taken. You'll have, as I'll conclude here, a lot of options with what to do with this proposal. But the language that you see before you is a resolution that would declare an emergency related to fire danger, and it would restrict in our county parks, and there's an Exhibit A there that lists the county parks that it would apply to, but it restricts the use of open flames, fireworks, and those kinds of things in those parks. There was some conversation with the commission and with our county fire marshal and our Utah County sheriff about their thoughts on this proposal. The Utah County fire marshal is very supportive, gave some insight and some comments on the language that's used in this draft. The Utah County sheriff, we identify the possible concern for him that there's not any language in this about enforcement measures or penalties. Utah County historically has been very hesitant to be heavy-handed in enforcement of a ban. And so many of our past resolutions like this have no penalties. Sometimes other organizations will put a $1,000 citation penalty if you violate the ban, if a member of the public were to start an open fire in our fire pits or things like that. That language isn't in here. If the commission would like to give direction on that, we're happy to implement that direction. There are still some enforcement options. Typically, how we would envision enforcement would happen is if a member of the public were using a fire pit and this ban were enacted, then they would be kindly reminded by law enforcement that the ban is in place and that they need to extinguish the flame. And if they were not compliant with that request, then they would have their implied license to be on the park, the county park, revoked, and they would be asked to leave. And if they didn't comply with that, they could be cited for trespass. So that's a typical enforcement that's within the realm of law enforcement currently. We would recommend that if we put a ban in place, some enforcement is appropriate. We could add language in here if that was desired, or we could leave it the way it is and has been done in many past resolutions like this. So that's an issue to discuss if the commissioners have thoughts on that topic. The other comment that I received from our county sheriff was that while he felt there was a need, and I don't want to speak for him, and I don't believe he's here today, but he did indicate that the Forest Service and the state are at what they call restriction level one, which allows open fires in grills and allows fires in fire pits. And so this would be a different level of restriction than what the Forest Service and the state are at. But it is something that, in our view, we have a legal right to do. The county owns these parks. So if these commissioners felt that it was in the best interest and prudent and for the public safety to put this kind of ban in place to prevent wildfires, you have that option to do so. So with that said, I'm happy to answer any questions. My other thought about this is that you have a number of options. You could discuss this and wait and see what the fire season looks like in the coming weeks, or you could implement it as written, or you could implement it with other instructions to us. So we, as a county attorney's office, are happy to do whatever is legal and constitutional and that this commission would like to see done, and we are excited to support you. So are there any questions?
Couple questions. You articulated a couple of my concerns. The Forest Service, like you mentioned, they do allow for in developed fire pits the fires and on the grills. They do have provisions in there though when it comes to smoking and whatever. So they are different. I think that could be confusing. But I guess the question that I have maybe for Richard is, how many fire pits and grills do we have in these listed parks that are developed fire pits and grills?
Most of them on the list that's on there, we have Nuns Park, Canyon View, Vivian, Lincoln Beach, and Spanish Fork River. And there'd also be some at Benjamin. They vary in numbers at each of those parks, but there are fire pits and grills at each of those parks, park facilities. Most of those are in the canyon areas. Lincoln Beach is out on the shores of Utah Lake at the north end of West Mountain. Benjamin Park is fairly, and in my mind, it's probably the safest one because it's got a manicured landscape around it. It's not out in the wildland areas, but there are fire facilities at each of these parks. The others that are listed on there are along our parkways. Most of those areas are running through residential areas, but they do have native grasses. So if we do have, and that's kind of where more like the fireworks and things like that come into play, what we don't want to have is a fire get started along the parkway and be in the close proximity to homes.
Yeah. And so for me personally, the fireworks ban, it totally makes sense. Yeah. I mean, if you're out in one of our canyons, and that's going on. It actually exceeds some of the areas within the city in which they have boundaries that are already set when you start getting up into there. We're not just getting up into there. We're in there.
Right.
So I totally get that part of it. The developed fire rings, though, or the grills that are there, I'm just not supportive of that at this point. I think that, you know, our other partners are doing the same. They have the developed fire, and they're right up in there. And I even mentioned a couple weeks ago to my fellow commissioners, I was up in American Fork Canyon at a developed, fire pit and grill area. And I just don't see the need to go that far with this.
I was up in American Fork Canyon last week as well. It was my son's birthday, and we went up to Tibble Fork, and I noticed that in the fire pits there were people having fires. I tend to agree with you, Commissioner Lee, that we should be consistent, that if the Forest Service is allowing it in fire pits and grills, then I'm okay allowing it in fire pits and grills. But I think there is an element of confusion for the public. If the Forest Service and the state gets to the point that they don't even feel comfortable with it in fire pits, then I would agree with that as well. Yeah. Right. So I think the consistency matters. But 100% agree with you on the fireworks as well. So I think your thoughts are exactly where I am on this issue.
In the concept of consistency, that's important. But the local parks generally will distinguish what is a state or national park and a county park, for that matter, city, what restrictions are in place. I have in mind the Spanish Fork Canyon. It's a wind tunnel most nights and mornings. Generally speaking,
Between 10 and 10.
Between 10 and 10. When we moved in, I had a family member who was so enraged that we lived in a windy city. Did not know that at the
cool
time.
Cool canyon breezes.
But the point here is that open pits the winds can carry hot ash. And if we were as extreme a drought condition as we seem to be from what I read and hear at the state level and local, that may be a major concern. Those ashes could be as hot as setting a match and throwing it into a pile of dry grass. So that's what I have in mind. There has been a time that I remember in the Diamond Fork Canyon Park, we were restricted to no open fires. I'm trying to remember what year that was, and we didn't think about it, but when someone started one, everyone jumped on about doing that, the restrictions that were in place, so we quickly put it out. But this is not unusual. I have seen this in this area before, and so that's why I'm supportive of that element of it. It is restrictive, but that's because of the unusual conditions that we live in.
And I think, you know, from Ben's comments before on the various different directions we can go, Public Works is of the same mindset. Whatever direction the commission would like to go with this, we're happy to work with that. We just kind of wanted to put it out in front of you and say, okay, hey, here's a concern. How would you like us to address it?
And as far as penalties and enforcement, I'd like to see reminders done by those who are managing those park sites. I'd like the sheriffs, and if there's some mutual agreement with a local city, to remind residents to, you know, if they see the fire going, it could be they're just unaware of it as we were many years ago. And so I would like to keep penalties mostly just simply as a reminder, or you lose your right to camp in that location.
I still think that we should allow for the fire in the fire pits, developed fire pits, not just the ad hoc ones.
Right.
And in the developed, usually you have a stand with the barbecue there, or
correct,
it might be by the fire pit where they bring their own gas, grill that's right in that same area. I do agree, though, that there needs to be some sort of, I think there should be some sort of penalty, especially if we're using fireworks, because a reminder on fireworks, don't shoot the fireworks. I don't think it goes as far. I think that the danger that we have is a lot more on the fireworks side than we do on the developed fire rings.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I
wonder if we could separate the two issues, right? We can say no fireworks. If you let off fireworks, there's a penalty. Mm-hmm. Right, and take that separately, and then take the fire pit issue and separate that, where you know, then we can decide whatever we decide. And then we can say, if there's a penalty along with that, whatever we decide, the penalty would be different, which would be something like, you know, along the lines of a reminder from the local law enforcement, if you don't comply with it, then trespassing, et cetera. But I'm wondering if we can separate those, maybe bring this up next week with those separated, giving us the ability to, or we could vote now to ban all fireworks. But like I said, I think that we might need a little more, maybe a little more time to hash this out, because I agree with you, Commissioner Lee. I'm total agreement with the fireworks ban, with there being a penalty for fireworks, because we can't just say, hey, don't do that. I mean, once the fire started, and then, you know, and then maybe taking the fire pit issue separately. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Maybe a ban on the fireworks and a ban on open flames outside.
Yeah, let's make those two resolutions areas. Perhaps. Can this be?
Yeah. Yeah, and just like you said, like a ban on fires outside of
the improved areas.
The improved pits. And I don't know exactly how to word that, but I agree. You know, the ad hoc fire pits, but the actual established ones that are cemented in. And
I think we could match the Forest Service language on that. And,
oh, yeah, perfect.
That's exactly right. I mean, the Forest Service and the state have what they call restriction level one, which is a ban on fireworks, a ban on tracer ammunition, a ban on certain kinds of incendiary devices, and a ban on smoking, and a ban on fires outside of the fire pits. And then their regulation level two is identical, but it adds the ban on fires even in the pits and the grills. So that's the only difference.
The other thing that I would be willing to do is say, why don't we mirror them? I would be willing to pass a resolution that says the county for this year, for 2021, the county will mirror the Forest Service.
So with probably an exception, because we do have agricultural that has burn permits, and so we got to be careful not to mirror.
Could we mirror it in county parks?
In county parks, yes. Mirror it in county parks.
County parks.
Right. I would be in favor of that.
I'm only anxious about timing. If we wait till next week, that only gives you a couple days for fireworks, whether it be to be banned or not. And so there'd be a lot of people buying it. Can we move something forward today that would ban fireworks?
Yeah, I think what if we say, I make a motion to approve, but the language to modify to say, we will mirror whatever level the Forest Service is at. If they're at a level one, I want to mirror their level one. If they're at a level two, we would mirror their level two. So,
in regards to the county, parks.
In the parks.
Right.
So,
and maybe just with respect to, there's generally three different categories. There's the restrictions, there's the exempt parties, so we can mirror what they exempt as well, or we could include additional exemptions. And then there's penalties, and I don't know that you want to mirror their penalties, but those are questions where we could use guidance and direction.
Okay, so what if I say I move to pass the resolution with the following modifications, that as far as restrictions go, we mirror the Forest Service restrictions in county parks. As far as penalties go, with what are their penalties? Just pause my motion.
Yeah, I'd have to double check that, but I believe they've got a $1,000 penalty per offense, but let's see if I have.
Well, and are you okay with that? Commissioner Lee, are you okay with that for fireworks?
For fireworks, I am.
Yeah. I think that's
the penalty part.
Yeah,
because the penalty part's just for fireworks, right?
Well, their penalty is per offense, but they're at restriction level one, and so they're not concerned about fires in fire pits and in approved grills.
Correct.
They're only concerned about open flame outside of those.
Okay, so area one was restrictions, right? That's mirror them in county parks. Area number two would be penalties, and the penalty would be $1,000 for fireworks. And then as far as fires outside of the established pits, it would be first would be a warning. Second, if they ignored the warning, would be a trespassing. And then what was the third?
If there's a trespassing, is there a financial penalty for trespassing or just asked to vacate?
There could be
yes, so that would be restrictions,
exceptions.
Exceptions. Those are really close words that mean almost the same thing.
We're talking about exemptions here.
Okay. And then number three, under exemptions, we will mirror them for exemptions.
Within
the county parks.
Right. And just for clarification's sake, when you say mirror, do you want, Commissioner, do you want the restriction level to change as they change it?
So I think if they change it, I would come back to us. But I would say at level one right now. Or should we just say mirror the whole way? I'm fine with that.
I think you need to follow what they have now, meaning modification.
Okay.
Right. Well, again.
And then any modifications would need to come before the commission. For the motion. Does that work?
The only thing I'm concerned about with the lands don't tend to be universal. So what the fire concerns are that's in our national parks, state parks, might differ than what is in our county parks. Mm-hmm. And I'm concerned about the conditions of winds that aggravate open pit fires, even though they're established. Those things, they do pose a significant risk for fires if it's an open flame. In Spanish Fork River Park area, Diamond Fork area, even American Fork area, those are significant fire issues that I see if you have an open pit fire. Yeah, and just to clarify and to reiterate, perhaps there is value in consistency. It is our opinion that we do not have to mirror them. We could have a more restrictive policy for our county parks because they are county parks. Yeah, and that's been why I wanted to pause it, because that's what I'm most concerned about.
So,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say we do have a motion. Is there a second to that motion?
I would like to add a couple items that's administrative in this, and that is in part two, number three, any on-duty firefighter in the performance of official duty has an exemption to the incendiary device or firearm, which is not shown in that in part one, number three. But I was wondering, I'm recommending that we have any on-duty or off-duty firefighter, peace officer, or sheriff in the performance of an official duty. Someone might be off-duty and sees a need to respond to something. That individual needs to be held harmless to if he or she should use their firearm. Does that make sense, Ben?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. And again, these exemptions in part two of this resolution show language that comes primarily from the Forest Service. And so these are the kind of exemptions you'll sometimes see. If you go to a higher level of restriction, you want to ban all shooting, or sometimes the county wants to try to drive shooting to a single location or restrict gunfire, tracer ammunition, different kinds of things like that. You may include off and on-duty police officers as well as firefighters. And there are a million ways we could go with this kind of a resolution.
Well, I just want to say number three, if it's on-duty firefighter, it should be on-duty and or off-duty firefighter, peace officer, or sheriff, because it should be all of them, not just a firefighter.
Well, and again, this does mirror the language of the Forest Service right now in that portion. And so they say on-duty firefighters, but we can say whatever the policymakers here want to say.
So you put that as a motion?
Yes.
Is that to amend?
Is there, and that, I guess, did you consider that a friendly motion, or would you like that as a separate?
I think that's a friendly amendment.
A friendly motion?
So part of your motion?
So part of the motion?
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a motion and a counter motion, a friendly part to that. Is do we have a second?
Yeah, I'll second that.
Well, let's see, you gave them.
Oh, yeah.
I'm allowed,
so I made the motion.
You made the motion.
I allowed the friendly amendment, so you need to second.
I'll second the motion with my concern about open fires and wind tunnel effects.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, discussion on that. One question to the friendly motion. I just want to make sure I hear what's going on there. I want to make sure that it doesn't cross. In putting this in there, does that limit anybody from shooting in the county? Now, we're talking parks specific.
Specific, yeah.
So all we're talking about is parks specific. And we have the listed names on there. But this amendment does not stop anybody else from shooting other than the parks.
I believe, and specifically
gun ranges, or they're, you know, or they're shooting their 22 while they're at camp. I'm just making sure that this friendly amendment doesn't do that.
Right. That's my understanding of what's intended by the amendment. I will point out, just for the commission's benefit, one of the Exhibit A listed parks is Soldier Pass Shooting Range. We do have shooting ranges. The Forest Service's language talks about tracer ammunition. It doesn't talk about shooting in general. So for mirroring them, shooting is allowed.
Shooting is allowed. And one of our parks, we do shooting. And we hope that people go there to do their shooting.
That's what we prefer.
That's what we'd like them to
shoot. So I just want to make sure that we're not crossing something a little funny there. Okay. Any other discussion on it?
No.
Okay. I do have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 That passes 3-0 with the modifications.
Thank you, Commissioner.
We have more work to do.
And this resolution is for 30 days only.
Okay.
The effective date is today's date.
I'll be here. I'll stick around.
Is it only for 30 days?
It is 30 days.
Usually evaluate.
Okay.
Yeah.
And effective today then, right?
It would be effective today. Yeah, we'll make some modifications of language based on the motion, but it would be effective.
Okay, today. That's fair. Totally fair.
We'll see where we are.
I apologize for asking to add a discussion piece, but how do we notify the public of this resolution?
I think at least for the park, we'll put some signs up in the parks
that
reflect that language.
Okay,
that'll be critical. Otherwise, how would they know? Yeah. They don't.
Unless they're watching today.
Yeah, which I'm sure there's probably 500 people watching, right, Alice?
Yes.
Pretty close.
Yeah, okay.
Pretty close.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we could do a press release with it. Absolutely. Who's going to write the press release? That's great, but somebody has to do it, so that's always the issue.
I'll work with our legal department, and we'll write a...
There you go. Okay, we got a volunteer for it. Okay. All right, thank you.
Anytime.
Okay.
We'll stay close by for number 16.
Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna take a couple-minute break, and we'll come right back. That's okay. Good. Okay. Fair enough. We're recording again. All right, we're back in open session. Final motion.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to adjourn.
I second that motion.
All in favor, well, we're adjourned.